everyone. Welcome to Charting Change in Legal. I am Caroline Hill. I'm editor-in-chief of Legal IT Insider, and I'm here with
Ari Kaplan. I'm an analyst that covers the legal industry. It's wonderful to see you.
It's so good to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I was abroad visiting our son who's studying in Barcelona and speaking at a, I spoke at a firm in Lisbon, and it was, boy, it was wonderful. Although I have to say, it's so interesting to me that we face similar challenges regardless of jurisdiction. I mean, I've known this in the US because I've had the fortune of traveling around to different places. So if you're in Chicago or New York or LA or Tucson, there are a lot of similar challenges in terms of managing a practice or client engagement, the use of technology. But when you go far afield and you realize that, wow, regardless of language, regardless of culture, practicing law has a lot of similarities and the challenges remain the same. And people, really need to be proactive and empowered and want to find the same level of satisfaction as anyone else in any other jurisdiction. So it was really wonderful, and it was great to have that opportunity to speak with those lawyers.
I guess it's not a surprise on one level in that, you face similar challenges around people, revenue, all of those benchmarks. I guess there are different jurisdictional challenges. But so what did you what were your I know you won't want to go into sort of detail, but what sort of topics were you talking about? Because it wasn't just Lisbon, right? You traveled across Europe.
Well, I did. I was in Lisbon, then I went to Porto, I was in Barcelona, and then Paris, and in I had meetings with legal professionals, both technology professionals and lawyers in almost all those cities, but except for Porto. We were there on the weekend. I did try to have a meeting in Porto, but it didn't materialize. But the one thing that I have found is really valuable in these talks, especially for a quick talk. If you only get an hour or an hour and a half to engage with a group of professionals, a lot of my research is about where are the trends? Where are we as a level set? And then where are we headed? But then the companion piece and the way I try to divide the program is, what do the trends show? And I'm lucky in that I get to speak to law firm leaders and corporate leaders, so I can get the sense of what are your peers doing, and also what do your clients want you to be doing. And with that as kind of the foundation, then I talk about, so what can you do to meet the moment, right? What are the strategies? What are the business development strategies? What are the client engagement strategies? If this is what your clients want, and if this is what your peers are doing, how do you reach that level, exceed that level? And so it becomes really fun because I get to talk about research that I have conducted. I get to share the perspectives of the peers of the people I'm talking to and or their clients, but also then give them practical ideas for how they can be successful. And I always learn something because the as you interview a lot of people, you do a lot of research. Like when you're studying an organization and you're trying to apply what they do to what others are doing, it teaches you something. And then when they start answering your questions, it gives you a level of insight that only happens in that moment. And I've always feel really grateful, and it was a lot of fun.
What were the key takeaways? Like, is it possible to say, like, what were the key things that they were asking you, or what were the key things that they were most concerned about to make
So
it?
what's fascinating to me, so the key concern, so the people I met with in Spain and in France, for example, were leaders in technology. And so they were obviously curious, how are firms like us, and these were, substantial law firms with many offices and a global presence, how are these other firms? We're seeing a lot here about what you're doing in the US with generative AI, with automation, and what's really happening. And I love that. I love the fact that the questions are characterized in that way. Like, what's really happening? Because as much as we're reading, I don't know that that's actually what we're doing. How are other organizations, transforming overnight, and we're still piloting something? And I'm like, we're still, everyone is still like in that stage. So regardless of what you're reading, there's an interesting kind of moment here where people have, I guess they probably, and I'm sure, I don't know, I would love to hear what you think of this. And it's just in terms of, I feel like we've surpassed the sort of initial level of what is this? And is it scary? And what how can we use it to really trying to be tactical about deployment, and there are committees and developing policies. Like we've certainly inched up a level. I don't know how much progress is being made, and that progress varies, but it was interesting because a lot of the questions were from the technology leaders, what's really happening, and where are we really in terms of our progression?
That's really interesting. Yeah, I see a divergence of, so I see a lot of firms doing some quite cool stuff. So in the last week or so, Clifford Chance rolled out Copilot across globally across all of its for all of its people. But then I still speak to people who are very almost skeptical. I'm still speaking to people who are skeptical, people who are really senior in the industry, and they're, that, and there's a real divergence. I think maybe at the beginning everybody was a bit like, oh my God. Then everybody went, this is really overhyped. And then now I think I see more of a split. Like, so I think I see some people plowing ahead. There are some people who are really worried about that. Like, I had a conversation with somebody who's very, very good, really hot, as a team, to an IT team, in terms of working with AI. And they're worried about this mentality, that sort of herd mentality, and what it means in terms of, when you read something. Like these people were saying, when you read something and then everybody wants it, right? And they're trying to sort of push back on that herd mentality. But I see this really big divergence. And there's honestly, like, some people are like, oh, we think it's just still all really a bit overblown, which is the most surprising for me personally, because it is overblown still, but we know that the significance is huge. So, did you meet anybody that had that kind of, oh, we just think it's all a load of rubbish, or no?
No, I think that the one point that I have been trying to emphasize, given the different constituencies that I get to speak with, is that the clients, whether that client is a general counsel or someone in compliance of a corporation or legal operations, whoever you perceive as your client, that person is getting the same questions in terms of how can we use generative AI, right? It's nobody is immune from that question, and everyone needs to have some kind of an answer, even if the answer is, well, we're holding off for now, but you need to have a reason. There needs to be some justification. Maybe it doesn't apply, maybe it's too expensive for certain applications, but there needs to be an understanding of what it is, how do you answer these questions, and a why. Do we need a policy? All right, well, how long is it going to take to develop a policy, right? There's a much more of a follow-up conversation that's happening around this. So everybody needs to be able to have a conversation and have it in a thoughtful way. You don't have to use it, you don't have to have use cases identified, but certainly we are definitely at a point where being familiar enough to have a meaningful conversation and be able to make plans for certain follow-up is really a necessity at this point.
Was there a difference between the different jurisdictions, like really notable or not really? Was this
I
sort of
wasn't
thing?
there long enough to know that, but the fascinating thing to me is always not the distinctions, but the similarities. The fact that, regardless of language, that people are asking almost the same exact questions, that they're feeling the same exact things. And that, in my mind, is helpful, because I was on a webinar the other night for an Australian audience. And so that's why I said for me, it was in the evening. And they asked me some questions about, did my research show something unique about Australian general counsel? It was for a general counsel report that I'd done with the Relativity and FTI. And so we had this great webinar. There was a general counsel in Australia on the call. We were talking about these issues. And I said, it's funny. Yes, there were some issues that some of the general counsel felt more concerned about certain regulatory issues or reputational risk or some other aspects of the role. I said, but the truth is, the similarities were much more connected to what kind of company you're in. So a financial services company in one jurisdiction might have a very similar set of challenges to a financial services company in another jurisdiction, as opposed to a whole bunch of companies in the same jurisdiction having the same kinds of questions and challenges. So it
Yeah.
was, I feel like this theme keeps coming up. Like we're, not quite, but we're all in this together. But if you can answer questions broadly in one area, they might be helpful to others. So think about how what you're doing can apply beyond where you're currently applying it.
I think so. When I was at ILTA last year, I spoke to some European CIOs, and inevitably we talked a lot about Gen AI, and they were talking about the restrictions around cloud still, right? And that there were, the sort of tough regulatory regime, which and that was really interesting in terms of, some of the conversations that we think aren't conversations for some jurisdictions are still conversations, right? And actually that's going to really impede their ability to embrace some of the newer technology. It's not something that I'm an expert of, sure, but I think it's something that I feel like I should be looking into more because it's funny, like we talk now about, I went to Elite's conference, Vantage in London, and they're sort of seeing much more traction around practice management, for example, which was traditionally like the last bastion of on-prem. It's still going to be a while, right? But it's interesting, until you're in the cloud, really, it's going to be difficult to take advantage of a lot of the newer technologies. So it's almost like you need to have those conversations around, where is your data, and is it in the cloud, and if it's not, then why? And and all of those conversations come very much, they've always been in play for the last little while, but they should be like front and center, right?
Yeah, and I think it's important. So there's clearly a distinction between the infrastructure of different jurisdictions. But I
Yeah.
think the questions about should we do this? Are you seeing this? Remain constant. So the capabilities, as you say, there may be regulatory challenges. There again, there may be infrastructure challenges, from one place to another, but I think the questions that people are asking are very similar in the practice as opposed to being so unusual from one location to another.
Yeah. In your space in the corporate world, there were some quite interesting developments. I think it's since we last spoke. Tell me if not. But there was a note, so a big group of corporates have come together to collaborate on Gen AI. I don't know if you've seen that. So it's Sense Collective, which I thought was really interesting. So we've talked a lot about, clients are need answers as well, and but I thought it was so interesting because they have come together in this collective. So you've got companies like Intel, Microsoft, all their GCs and senior people come together with Factor as well. I think Factor has engineered the so that will be really fascinating to see what comes out of that, because they've been muddling along on their own. Not muddling. I don't know, does Intel muddle? But they've been having to reinvent the wheel effectively on their own, and so now they're collaborating, which is really interesting. They're obviously competitive in so many ways, but they've come together to discuss Gen AI and some of the base fundamental principles and they're how they're going to be what they expect from law firms. I have absolutely no doubt that that's going to be a priority, and how they communicate that and how they expect results. And so I think it's going to be fascinating to see what comes out of that.
I actually have always been so interested in the way that communities like law firm communities or corporate legal communities or others create ad hoc groups amongst themselves. So it's great to see a formalized group, and I'm excited about what they're going to find and what they're going to share with the community broadly. But I would guess that there are other informal groups that are asking each other questions, that are meeting over lunch. The clock itself started as a group of a handful of companies and grew, and it was informal, and someone would host a lunch. And at the same time that they were doing that, these clock had historically been West Coast based. So sort of the Silicon Valley high tech companies were meeting and having conversations about tactical things like metrics
Yeah.
and other very detailed issues. But at the same time, across the country, the financial services and insurance companies were meeting in New York, and they were having a very similar conversation. And so, sort of Biggie and Tupac, right? I mean, like you had East Coast, West Coast of legal operations, and I just think that is probably happening. And it's great to see this collective, and it clearly made up of a remarkable group of individuals. And I think it's going to be great to see. It would be wonderful to know how many of these are taking, like who else is informally doing this, and is there a way to compile all of that?
Yeah, it's
Maybe there's a
interesting that then.
mid-sized company, a small company group. I think that it'll be interesting to see how that all evolves.
But it's interesting to me that it's not sort of a clock initiative. But I guess, when you've got it's quite, when you've got a very big organization, I think sometimes you need to break it down, right? So I wouldn't be surprised either if you've got lots of these different groups. Sometimes you just need to have like smaller conversations, right? It's sort of when you need to get stuff done. And yeah, so it'll be fascinating to
Well,
see.
I host a series of dinners, and it's interesting to see how much more is accomplished with almost fewer individuals. My goal is always to get as many people as possible, and then you realize, wait, you can't really facilitate a meaningful conversation if there are too many people. And so that's why I feel like you're probably seeing lots of these kinds of groups as
Yeah.
opposed to one giant group, because then it becomes a conference. And then a conference has a different objective than a roundtable discussion. And so
We did a dinner back in the early days, and we were saying it was a sponsored dinner, and it was great. It worked so well. But we were saying, we don't want the objective is not to get too many people, right? Obviously sometimes people who sponsor these dinners, they want more, the more people the better. But I'm not exactly like you. I'm like, actually, let's just keep this conversation so that we can really listen to each other and develop some ideas, like that sort of thing, like not more, more is better.
Well, because you were kind to come when I held one in London, but I've hosted a series of
No.
breakfasts, right? This Legal Tech
Yeah.
Mafia series. And I've been trying, actually, I've not been trying. I've made a commitment to be consistent about them. I used to kind of ad hoc, maybe every few months, quarterly, but I've really tried to stick to like a monthly cadence. And so they've grown a little bit, and there's kind of a sweet spot of the number where you can have a meaningful conversation, network, and kind of be out of there in 90 minutes, right? Like there's a formula to some of this, and you have to kind of hit it right and find your equilibrium. And I think that it's great that these conversations are happening, and hopefully we'll share it as a community and talk about how it'll elevate everyone's role.
I wanted to talk a little bit about International Women's Day and Week, but did you go to have you been to you haven't been to any conferences, have you? You haven't done the tech show or anything like that, or is there anything
No.
coming up on the conference front?
I'll be a clock,
Oh yeah,
and
wait.
I'll also it's first week of May.
Okay, I might come.
And then a couple of weeks after that, I'll be at the Association of Legal Administrators Conference in Denver.
Fair enough.
So, I have some research that I'm doing now, speaking to law firm CIOs and COOs at the mid-market level. And so I will share that research at the conference, but nothing until then, I think.
Might have to come to Clock because I didn't get to come to Legal Week. And it's in Vegas, and I love Vegas.
It's at a different venue this year too, I noticed. So several conferences have moved to the Aria, which is a beautiful hotel
Yeah.
and kind of next door, but in Las Vegas, next door means really far away.
I know. I just
Yeah.
oh, love it. I actually haven't been for so long. And then the other thing that next time we meet, we're going to have to talk about is your virtual lunches, because you've nearly hit 1,000, right?
Almost 1,000. We will have our
What? A
fourth
thousand.
anniversary next week. So
Oh
it'll be
God.
4 years of the virtual lunch. And you know what? Can I just say that
Every
lately,
day, people, that Ari does this, the dedication. Did you do the virtual lunch while you were away?
I did not. I, you know what?
No.
I used to do that. I used
Oh,
to log in at 5 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock or wherever I was, and I stopped doing that. So I had a streak doing it every day for a very long time, like a year and a half or 2 years, whatever. But then when travel returned,
that's so
I've gave myself some grace and didn't log in those days. But you know, the minute I came back, we were back
funny. Yeah.
on
You've done it
and.
every Every day for pretty much, with a few exceptions, for 4 years. It's just the consistency. I mean, you and I've talked about this. Your consistency is just astonishing. It
Chip
blows my
away. That's my theory.
mind
But
every day. I like the fact you call it a streak as well. It reminds me of my kids with
well,
Snapchat.
streaks are, well, I'm a big believer in the power of a streak, right? I have certain athletic goal streaks and other things, and I just think that there's power in trying to maintain a streak. And so I encourage people, because you'd be surprised how much you can accomplish if you stay consistent with a streak. I mean, it's imperfect, but it's a good objective. The one thing I think is important to kind of acknowledge is that we've been having a lot of very interesting, meaningful conversations about wellness. You brought up International Women's Day, and we've been talking about, you know, progress in the workplace and, you know, equal opportunities. And just for some reason, organically, this idea, I don't think for some reason, I think that, you know, the legal profession is again starting to see people struggle with, you know, their schedules and the work and balancing, now that we're kind of back, if you will, to some normal schedule and a normal pace. And so we've been having these very powerful and meaningful conversations about, you know, finding ways to lift each other up and understand when people are struggling and whose responsibility is it? Is it ours? Is it our communities? Is it the firms? Is it the companies? And so it's you know, I think it gives me the sense that we are maybe at some kind of inflection point in legal, where we went through this, you know, catastrophic period that consumed years. And now we're, I don't know, trying to redefine what the practice looks like, where technology fits in. And I don't know, for somehow organically, we've been having these very meaningful conversations about what does it mean to be successful? What's enough? How much is enough? When do you have enough? And if you have enough, is it okay to do less, or do you have to keep driving forward as a, you know, as a New Yorker? We were talking earlier that New Yorkers, the quintessential thing that New Yorkers do is run for the light. They have to make the light. I don't know what's on the other side of Fifth Avenue, but you must make the light. And I just wonder if we're rethinking that. Can I just wait? Is it okay to just stand there and
Just
wait for the
because
light
you've
to
done,
change?
you just, this is all just you traveling and meeting somebody who's just stopped working at 50. So
I did meet so
you're having like a midlife, late life crisis because you want to now just become a backpacker.
it well it just makes you think. It was more than that. I just felt like we've and I haven't necessarily initiated these conversations, but on the virtual lunch, you know, it's a wonderful community of folks, and you know, there's a lot of things that we talk about, but recently we've been talking about this. And I do th I'm sure it has been informed in some way by my travels, but I also think that it does indicate something changing about the profession. Maybe the fact that there's this you know, sort of wonderful, new, thrilling, scary technology that has consumed us, and everyone's like, wow, what does that mean? And if it means something particularly impactful, does that mean that I what does that mean for me? And I wonder if we're, you know, we're having the right conversations. Is it just about technology, or is it about reimagining what it is that we're doing, and from a professional standpoint, and try to see if we can upskill.
Sorry, people seem to be very much back in the office, right? I mean, over here, there's it's quite tragic actually, but there's a big the work-life balance is very much front and center right now because of a tragic Pinsent Mason's partner who died. That's been all over the news, mainstream news, legal tech news. You know, she's been talking about her workload and how we must do better, and you know, we need to create lasting change. And I think, you know, people, it's difficult because people are being encouraged, or in some cases pushed back into the office, you know, to work, get a bonus. And I think that this year is really like the first normal, in inverted commas, year after the pandemic. So last year we were just finding our feet, coming back into the office and working all out. And this year, I think, you know, it has the potential to have some degree of normal, no, you know, normal, whatever that is, for people, you know. But I do think technology has to play a really important part in when you're in, you know, we've talked about this for years now, you know, but really using it properly. And I don't think firms are, they are not, you know, they're not using all the technology that's available out there in terms of resources, for example, in terms of who's doing what and having complete visibility over all of their people, regardless of where they're working, and, you know, making sure that the work is distributed in an even and fair fashion. And there's technology out there that a ton of firms are not using to do that, right? And they're not using, you know, there's some really cool technology that you can use in terms of planning, you know, when you're in the office and who comes in and all this kind of stuff. They're not all using those. I mean, there's uptake and there's improvement, but I think, you know, when you're talking about improving people's lives, I think that there should be, you know, there's a responsibility to look at what technology is available to kind of help people's lives be better and better managed, right? Like, so that you haven't got one person doing all the work and or coming into the office when you don't need to because you're just doing emails, or, you know, like, I think that you need to be smart about it. And if they haven't got those types of technologies, then they should be asking why,
Yeah.
personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my, well, you mentioned International Women's Day, and it always
I haven't
makes me,
thought about it yet, Ari.
I
You
know,
didn't
but it just,
talk about
it makes me, I didn't mean to change the subject. I think that what
it. No, it's okay.
what you're saying is incredibly powerful, and it resonates with me, and it's something that we have talked about, and that level of balance is something that people should continue to strive for. And you know, when my kids were little, I used to always tell them to take a deep breath. You know, that was like my thing. I was always like, you know, take a deep breath. They were like, you know, Dad, it's really annoying. You always say that. I said, you know, when you take a deep breath, you know, you inhale oxygen, and then the oxygen goes to your brain, and you can think more clearly. And whatever it is that's bothering you, maybe in that moment you get some clarity. So, and as they've gotten older, like the deep breath thing, you know, there's a bunch of little sayings that they find annoying,
So
but
true.
somehow apply. But I do think that there's a moment of kind of collective pause, a collective deep breath, a collective sense of appreciation, of gratitude, and like, okay, that'll be there in an hour. That'll be there in a half an hour. You know, whatever. I don't know that you need to take a vacation as much as in every situation. I just think that, you know, some situation, this your such the situation you've described is awful, right? There's like, it's objectively
Awful.
like an awful situation.
Yeah.
And so, as much as there's no way to go back from that, what's the takeaway? Like, not a takeaway, but you know, what can we apply in terms of how this transpired? I don't know. You know, I just we've
They're
had a
doing a ton
conversation
of
about this.
invest. They're
What'd you
doing a
say?
ton. They're doing a ton of investigation into it, right? Like, there's lots of there's inquests and there's
No, but
lots of.
beyond that, I mean, like, okay,
Oh
so when you yourself or your someone on your
yes,
team, you know,
right.
we can't manage the world, right? Like, we need to figure out how can we be our best selves, and how can we empower our peers to be their best selves? Like, you can't, you know, very few of us that could change everything about everything in the world. So let's assume that's a pretty lofty goal. And if you want to, you know, just chip away at something close. And so the question is just, you know, what's that takeaway? What's, you know, is what's,
Yeah.
what does the collective deep breath look like? And how do we do it? If in fact we are in some inflection point. So anyway, closing that point, I just want to acknowledge International Women's Day.
Yeah. Oh yeah, can I tell you? So I wrote a piece, Ari, about, so I don't like, so I'm not, I'm really confused about International Women's Day. Like, I kind of, I've seen some great pieces about it, and, you know, some really well-written bits celebrating, but I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure where I sit. There's like a kind of, it's quite polarizing. This is what I wrote today, actually. It's quite polarizing. You know, you get some people who are real fans and we can celebrate all the women around us. I've had some really touching messages, I have to say, and that's, and it makes me think should be less of a bah humbug about this whole thing, because I've gone, oh, that's so special. They go, you're inspirational. I'm like, oh, and then messaging other people, right? So I'm a hypocrite, basically. But there's also, Anyway, I wrote this piece saying it should be about action, not just words. So we should each year use International Women's Day as, and potentially other days around diversity or whatever it might be, to kind of measure what we've achieved over the last year, right? So and I wrote this piece saying, this is what I'm proud of. This is what we've done in the last few months. So I've created the Say Gap, which you and I've talked about, which is helping to teach women to speak up and be confident. I'm working cl quite closely with Netlaw Media's Deltas, which is a diversity, it's broad diversity, not just gender, but teach, speaking in schools and teaching kids to code, and that's through Netlaw Media. But and then spoke to Andrea Markstrom, who's the CEO of IWill, and tried to promote her event. And I just said it's about, trying to take action to improve the situation. You can't boil the ocean, but if everybody takes action, and then each year we go, okay, what have I done this year, and what can I do better, and be candid about it, right? So there's stuff I could have done better. I could do more. I could always do more. But I quite like, it was a bit of a call to action in a way, just saying, what have you done? Let's not just talk about, aren't women fantastic? Let's say, right, I've achieved this, and then next year kind of almost hold each other to account. So now I'm so now I'm better be have something to say by this time next year, right? But it's important.
Absolutely. My wife always jokes with me because I'll say to her, or I won't have to say to her, but it'll be my birthday or something. And she'll laugh. She'll be like, you know what? Every day is your birthday. You're treated so well here. And she's right. My family treats me very well, and she especially. And I just think that every day should be one of these days, like, International Women's Day. Like, why do we, isn't that the whole point? Is it like, but you're, identification of the day as the point at which to assess how things have gone. Every day should be International Women's Day, and every day should be so many of these moments. Otherwise, we're not doing this properly.
I agree with you.
But measuring on certain days, and frankly, I think we should measure more often than annually,
Yeah,
which
true.
is another point. I actually, so I'm writing a new book, and today I was actually, it's funny that we're talking about this, because I was talking, because we've been having conversations about on the virtual lunch about how much is enough,
Yeah.
and me that in a narrow way, how much time have I spent, have I spent enough time on a memo at work, or on a brief or something, or how much is enough in terms of, have I accomplished enough to be able to be proud of myself, to take pride in my work? Do I have enough money to say, I don't feel like doing that project, or I'm not going to go there to do that. I'll have somebody else do it. I'll just earn a little bit less. It's fine. And so, your point, how much progress is enough progress? And I don't know the answer to that question, but certainly without measuring and measuring frequently,
Yeah.
we can't tell. His progress is funny in that, right? It happens
Yeah.
slowly, and then it happens rapidly.
And
And
if everybody feels that there's a day, and for all of these days, I think that's a great, like for whatever day is, that's the day when you account, insofar as it's relevant, that's the day when you account, and it puts it, makes it, you it makes it come into, you can reflect on the fact that every day is an opportunity. And then you kind of account for it. I mean, I wouldn't want it to turn into a day when everyone starts beating each other over the head with it, because that turns it into a really negative thing. And I put about, it's a day when we can celebrate. I was very conscious of the language of saying we can celebrate our achievements, right? That hopefully the expectation is that we can all say, hey, I've done this and I've done this. And it could be a celebratory day rather than a, oh, you've not done enough. Like, I think
no, but
that should.
if it's more than, wow, Caroline, you're amazing. If it's more than that, then we might see a greater sense of collective action. So, for example, I don't know if you've ever done any coaching, but I have had coaching and also been a coach, and I find that when I've had a meeting scheduled with a coach, I tend to be very active about what the coach said I should do 2 weeks ago. And the
Yeah.
same thing for me, when I'm scheduling a meeting with someone, a coaching client of mine, they'll be very active the hour before to get everything done so that they have something to report. And I feel
That's
like
it.
if to your point, we were t using these moments as reporting moments or assessment moments, You might, even if that action just took place in terms of making sure something occurs or changing the composition of a corporate board or something, even if it just happens a month before as opposed to throughout the whole year, you're still have made progress in whatever period that you want. And I just although I yeah, I think that these are all really important moments to step back and try to gauge where we've come from and where we're headed. If you can reflect and plan, you can make change.
Let's throw this out as a challenge, right, to everybody. Let's just so do that. Go do that, right? Use these moments as a like an audit. I called it an audit, which probably isn't a really good word because everybody hates audits. But that's the challenge, you know. Go do good stuff, and then we'll have this conversation again next year about what you've achieved. And let's be honest about it. And I'm going to be honest about it. You know, I've got some plans. We're all time poor, but it's about making them a priority, right? And actually, seeing rewards is so great, right? So let's focus on successes this time next year, hopefully.
Well, I'm so glad that we planned for this discussion and, proud to collaborate with you. And I really enjoy this as always. And to our many listeners, we want to thank you for participating today. And Caroline,
It
yeah, this is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, see ya.
Bye.